the truth is actually words do inspire. Words do help people get involved. Words do help members.
Bushra Nasab is the president of the Association of Political Science Students at the University of Toronto. Bushra is currently completing an Honours Bachelor of Arts degree in Peace, Conflict, and Justice Studies, with a minor in Political Science with high distinction. She is in her final year. Bushra has studied the causes of conflict, conflict resolution, peace building, the consequences of conflict, peace and reconciliation strategies, and the development of justice in past and current war-torn countries. In addition, Bushra has examined transitional justice. She is also an intern at the Senate of Canada, along with being a chair of the Peace, Conflict, and Justice Studies Annual Conference. Welcome, Bushra. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
As the president of the Association of Political Science Students, you oversee communication, academic programming, conferences, and the strategic direction of the association. Please begin by telling us more about yourself. Specifically, what inspired you to pursue studying peace, conflict, and justice studies?
Well, I think the biggest inspiration for my chosen field of study is my background and origin. I'm Syrian by origin. I'm born in Syria. My parents immigrated to Canada about 19 years ago. And the ongoing conflict in Syria actually started before I began university. In 2011, I started university in 2012. So that was definitely one thing that inspired me to pursue this sort of educational pathway, hopefully to gain enough knowledge to one day use that knowledge and experiences gained at the university and through my program to one day apply to the real world to perhaps, help develop peace-building mechanisms and transitional justice mechanisms for Syria. As you know, the Syrian crisis has been named one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world, and it just keeps getting worse. So I'm hoping that, at the very least, when I graduate, perhaps take some time off from school to get into the practical world and apply everything that I've learned towards a country that I have a stake in and I have a personal connection to.
Begin by providing our listeners with relevant information pertaining to the Association of Political Science. Specifically, tell us more about the history along with the main goals of the association.
Okay, so the Association of Political Science Students has been around for quite a long time. I would imagine, don't know exact numbers, but I would imagine it's been around for at least 30 years now. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the largest course unions at the University of Toronto. We represent almost 3,000 students. And our goal is basically to enrich political science education around the university and in the political science community as a whole. So we host workshops, academic seminars, conferences, socials. We try to bring in diplomats and scholars to speak to students, to reach out to students. All the while, we try to expose students to on-campus and off-campus political science opportunities. So we really want to, we're out there to represent students, but also help them because it is not easy to find out about opportunities. And as we grow increasingly competitive nowadays in terms of job prospects and whatnot, students need that sort of exposure to connections and to building their network and varying kind of experiences related to their field. So that's what we hope to do. And we do organize a number of events throughout the year that tries to fulfill that goal.
As the president of the Association of Political Science Students, what strategies have you implemented in order to engage a wider range of students in the association's activities?
Well, we do aim at partnering with other student organizations just to expand our outreach. So we do partner with student unions in related disciplines such as peace and conflict studies, international relations, history. A lot of the times their goals parallel with ours. And a lot of students are in very interdisciplinary programs. For instance, international relations looks at the interaction between economics, politics, and history. So there's a lot of overlap, and that's how I've found is one of the best strategies at reaching out to a wider range of students is by collaborating with other student unions.
What are some of the opportunities and challenges you have experienced and faced as the president of the Association of Political Science?
I would definitely say outreach is a hard job. Reaching out to students and getting them motivated to attend some of our events and stuff like that, they don't really realize the importance of making the connections and gaining the experience until later on in their undergraduate degree, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I do find that lower years, in particular first year and second year students, are not so keen and motivated in participating in these sort of extracurricular activities. You know, they're more very class-oriented. They go home, they do their readings, and that's it. Only when it's time to apply to grad school and law school and whatnot do they realize, oh, you know what, I think it would have helped if I made a few connections or I got a bit more involved. So it's definitely reaching out to the younger people.
It definitely sounds like you're very influential as the president of the Political Science Association. I strongly feel that you've committed yourself and you've dedicated a lot of time towards helping undergraduate students and then also students who might not necessarily be in the discipline but might obtain a benefit from being affiliated with the association itself. So what advice can you provide to the youth interested in becoming involved in international relations? Specifically, what advice would you give to elementary, high school, college, and university students who are considering pursuing international relations?
Okay, well, I mean, for those considering the field of international relations, whether they be in high school or whether they want to do grad school international relations, I find that you really have to involve yourself outside the books. You really have to go to these sort of like academic seminars that bring in diplomats to speak, because you never really know who you're going to meet. For me, drawing on my experience, last year I went on a field trip to the Parliament of Canada in Ottawa. There I actually met the senator that I currently intern for. And interning in the Senate has not only exposed me, I lived in Ottawa throughout the summer, and not only has that exposed me to the federal politics of Canada, but also exposed me to MPs, senators, you know, the individual that you're working with may have other connections to other NGOs. So I feel like you really have to work on yourself. You know, you really have to put yourself out there. And I feel like with my experience at the University of Toronto in particular, the opportunities are there, but you're not spoon-fed the opportunities.
You have to go out there. You have to engage. You have to be active in ensuring that not only do you take the time to pursue a program, but that you take the initiative to network and to become a member of certain associations, of certain groups that would definitely benefit you in the long term.
Exactly. And that's the biggest advice I can give to anyone in this sort of field. Is you really have to put yourself out there. You have to take the initiative towards, you know, bettering yourself. Because just getting to know one person can lead to something that you've never expected.
Definitely. What are some groups and organizations that you would suggest these students engage in?
Well, if you are looking at the university atmosphere, there are any university that you go to in Canada, like especially, there are numerous clubs that you can get involved with. A lot of United Nations branches have, you know, campus groups, like for instance, UNICEF, UNHCR, you know, all of these NGOs, for instance, like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the Red Cross, they all have student societies at local universities. And these student societies have connections to the big headquarters, the bigger NGO headquarters. So if you really want to get involved, that's one way that you can get involved. Other ways, I mean, you know, a lot of government departments and NGOs do offer internships. You know, it just takes the initiative to go on their websites and find out what sort of opportunities they're offering.
Exactly. Your research has typically been around refugee issues, conflict in the Middle East, as well as the analysis of Middle Eastern insurgencies. Mm-hmm. Please discuss some of the relevant findings that you have encountered as a result of your research.
Well, I did do an extensive amount of research on refugees. That's the one I did the most research on. And the relationships, refugees have a tremendous amount of relationships between the idea of the concept of conflict and the concept of peace. Refugees are not just a consequence of conflict and violence and war, but they also have the potential to create conflict at various levels in society. So you have at the macro level, refugees spillover in other countries can actually lead to conflict spillover as a whole. When you have innocent civilian refugees being mixed with, for instance, people associated with rebel groups, they just put themselves with the refugees. The host country thinks they're refugees, but you know what? These people might cause problems. They're bringing the conflict from the country at war to the host country, and that leads to conflict spillover. And you can actually see that. You've seen that a lot in the past. In Afghanistan, for instance, when there was an outflow of refugees from Afghanistan to Pakistan, some of the people involved with insurgencies in Afghanistan took their violence with them to Pakistan, resulting in conflict spillover. So we can see here that refugees are not just a consequence of conflict, they can also lead to a cause of conflict. Focusing down towards more of a micro level, we can see that in refugee areas and camps, for instance, you have the development of gender-based violence. So women and girls are subject to basically rape and sexual abuse, not only by their partners, but also sometimes members of the host community. They see them as very vulnerable, and they ultimately become victimized.
What would you say would be the solution in order to prevent that violence?
So I did do some research on this as well. So refugees can also be connected to the development of peace. So what I would recommend for the international community to do is perhaps involve refugees in peace-building mechanisms. So what that can include, for instance, they could, first of all, educate women on how to deal with sort of gender-based violence. They could establish educational institutions so that all these refugee children do not become a lost generation. You want these students and these young youth and children to gain enough knowledge that they could use that knowledge and experience gained in educational institutions to go back to one day to their countries and help rebuild. When it comes to conflict spillover, obviously, it's not as simple. You know, that's something like that, it's not easy to control, especially when you have a massive amount of refugees outflowing. You know, how do you know who's really a refugee and who belongs to an insurgency?
It's a difficult process.
For sure. It's a very difficult process.
In terms of applying a theoretical knowledge gained through your studies about your country of origin, which is Syria,
mm-hmm.
What are some possible routes to peace other than the ones that you specified? Specifically, what are the best ways to attain justice involving this particular crisis involving Syria?
So what's the best way to attain justice for
Yes.
Syria? You know, they say there's no peace without justice. And I think that really applies to Syria because there has been a tremendous amount of injustice committed against the Syrian people by varying parties. It's not just the Syrian government. You also have a great number of rebel groups in Syria, ranging from the moderate rebel groups to more extreme factions of rebels. And then you have, obviously, ISIS. So you have these people that have been victimized for now almost 5 years and how do you bring justice to them? Even if the war stops, how do you bring justice to the mother who lost her son? So obviously, I mean, justice is not something that's easily given to a country that has been subject to war for numerous years. You know, you can halt the fighting, you can bring peace, but how do you bring justice? Well, I think one way we could bring justice to Syria, but this is a long process, obviously. You will see the effects of such a process in the long term is through by establishing transitional justice mechanisms. So essentially what transitional justice mechanisms and institutions entail is that you establish in these post-conflict societies things like courts. And so basically they seek to bring people who have brought injustice to Syrians in this case, to court, to trial, make sure that they get what they deserve. What you can also do, what I would encourage is actually in these processes to involve women in these court trials, because women in war situations are oftentimes one of the most victimized parties in a conflict. Additionally, they tend to have a different outlook on how to attain justice. So they tend to look at the more of the societal needs of a given country, whereas men tend to be a bit more harsher when it comes to to dealing with justice and peace. So I would definitely encourage, you know, groups like the United Nations, for instance, and big NGOs to establish a comprehensive plan for implementing transitional justice mechanisms in Syria. And that's the only way you can attain justice. But like I said, this is something that's not going to happen overnight. This is at least a decade-long process, minimum.
It's definitely going to take a lot of time and a lot of resources. However, you did make an interesting point when you stated that women should be involved in the process. The people who are victimized should be the ones who have their voices heard. And I think that in this situation, we definitely need a lot of support from Canada, from the United States, as many countries as possible in order to help assist with the mitigation of this issue.
Maybe you could be a mayor, or a senator, or a Supreme Court justice. You ready? But you might not know that until you join student government or the debate team. And no matter what you want to do with your life, I guarantee that you'll need an education to do it. Let's go! What you make of your education will decide nothing less than the future of this country.